ladies and gentlemen, Greg Proops.
Oh, Canada, my home and native land. Oh, standing on guard for thee here in the depths of the moist climes of the city near the lake, Toronto, Ontario, right here in fabulous Canada, at the Comedy Bar on the third anniversary of this fine club here, ladies and gentlemen. It's the smartest man in the world, Proopcast, once again, taking to the ether through the intense moisture that is the atmosphere of Toronto. Very excellent to be back here. I want to thank everyone at the Comedy Bar for showing me such a good time. We've done improv this weekend. We've done stand-up. Now the podcast, and after this, a sketch show at which I'm supposed to learn some lines. Exactly. I think Mr. Vodka will have something to say about that. This isn't my first time in Toronto. I've been here many times. I think the first time I was here was in... of course, by the way, when this Proopcast is recording, is or this vodcast, if you will, is the night of the Grey's Cup. I don't think the match... Have they started the match yet? No. No. When's it, 8 o'clock or something?
Who cares?
Who cares? Wow. Wow, apathy. We are in a big urban city. Hey, cynical, jaded hipsters. Is there no room in your heart to take part in a national event that you don't have a dog in that fight? Wow. Just the typical provincial rancor that I've come to expect from Canada. Blue Bombers, fuck them, they're from Winnipeg, man. Wow. I went to the bookstore today and the woman went, next Blue Bombers fan in line, please. Oh, yeah. And you guys just mildly titter because you really don't care. Wow. Does Toronto have a team? What are you, the Argonauts or something?
Yeah.
The Argonauts, yes. If the Argonauts were in it, would there be excitement or would you have the same customary? I didn't think so. Stupid question, yeah, no. I think Sang-froid is the team you guys are rooting for. Is Baudelaire playing tonight? Well, I was going to wish the team's luck and wish that Vancouver doesn't have a riot like they do after they lose every important match. They had every reason to riot when they lost the Stanley Cup. I detest all sports teams from Boston. I think the only proper way when you lose ignominiously to Boston you should have won is to burn your town to the ground and start over. Because Boston is just an unsupportable miasma of guys named Doug and Ken. And their teams, no way can I ever support them. I do like the Blue Bombers. Could anyone explain to me why Winnipeg's team is the Blue Bombers and not the Rough Riders like every other team in the Canadian Football League? Why are they the Blue Bombers? Is there some significance to that? No, no one even knows in this room. I might as well be asked, wow, I'm asking a question of professional sports of a crowd that has spent the entire day reading graphic novels. I'm so getting that vibe here. Yeah. Yeah, wow. Am I barking up the wrong tree? Well, okay. We wish both teams well, blah, 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 blah. Canadian football, much different than American football, in so much as it's played here and the season's over. I was here in 1992, was it? We were playing, called the Toronto Comedy Festival. Not the JFL one, this was a different one. And I came up with a bunch of guys from San Francisco. And I remember going out to the island, right? Isn't there a little island you take a boat out to, right?
Toronto Island.
Toronto Island, all right. I'm not asking for help every goddamn second, okay? I'm gonna do a lot of the heavy lifting, you guys. I appreciate that. But there's a little too much information coming from the crowd here. This isn't like Oprah. I'm not giving a car away. Although I will be recommending a book later, a good one. Now, I'm joking, of course. The Toronto Island. So I took the little ferry out, right? I was by myself, although I was here with a bunch of other comedians. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go get lunch. And we got the island. And it was a beautiful sunny day. It was the summertime here. Not too much humidity, because I've been here in the summer where, like, you sweat in the shower. And then, of course, in the wintertime here, they superheat every place you walk into, so that you go from the biting-ass cold to where the sweat is freezing on your neck into what appears to be a womb. You walk into a place, and you're like, oh, my God, you know, all of a sudden, I've got an umbilical cord stuck inside me, and I'm taking nutrition through, you know, my blood, and it's just unbelievably warm in some of the Rexalls here. So I goes out to Toronto Island, I take the boat out, right? And I'm just grooving on the vibes. I believe it was Gino Vannelli who said, just feeling the vibes of the oncoming day. And I'll be quoting Gino Vannelli throughout the night. We might get to a little April wine later. Yeah, I like to rock. And some like it hot, baby. I take the boats out to Vancouver Island, which is quite a journey from here, by the way. You should really never take that route. It's extraordinarily long. It's a very tiny boat as well. But we dropped to Toronto Island. I get off, and I'm just walking along. And it must have been nesting season or something, because there was a black bird. I think it was a starling. I'm not a big ornithologist. I'm not like James Audubon or whatever. John, whatever his name was. Mr. Audubon. I don't recognize birds on sight. Penguins, yes. An ostrich, I think I could make out. Other birds sort of churn into one large bird for me. So I'm walking along, and a bird fucking attacks me, right? Just, you know, and you know the terror of when you're being attacked by a bird? You feel like, all I can think of is Suzanne Plachette in the movie. Just laying there with her eyes poked out, you know, and the kids singing that horrible droney song over and over again. And since everyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, it was a movie by Alfred Hitchcock called The Birds, ladies and gentlemen. Holy kittens, this show's going to be long. And cheers. The soothing booze. And the bird is on my head pecking me, right? And I'm shrieking like a four-year-old. Just horrible. And waving my... And of course, if a bird attacks you, I mean, I don't know anything about like when birds attack, but my guess is you should probably just grab it and like push it away from you and it would fuck off, is my guess. But instead, I think everyone has the same reaction when a bird gets in their hair and just goes... like that. I literally just waved my hands ineffectually. It's like when you see the old time horror movies where the person just stands there and goes, no, 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 instead of running. I had the option to run. I could have run back the way I came, but no, I stood there and went, wee. So finally the bird leaves off and I skitter away and I go and I sit down on a bench and I smoke a big joint run and I'm just looking at the lake and Toronto Lake and where Toronto Island's located. And, you know, to the point where your floaters are just running mad. I don't know if anyone has floaters, but I have the crazy floaters, right? So the world just looks like a big dish of paramecium. And really, like you're looking through a microscope. It's just weird, undulating, flagellating things going by with tiny eyes in them and whatnot. And if you have floaters, it's awesome. It's like psychedelics, but all you have to do is drink a cup of coffee and look at the sky. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Okay, all right. I never know in Canada. You're so polite here. Sometimes you substitute silence for laughter. I did two stand-up sets last night, and sometimes I thought, is the audience still here? And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, we're here. It's really funny. I know laughter would only encourage me in that case. I smoke a big joint. I'm looking at the sky. Everything's, you know, oscillating, right? And I completely lose my short-term memory. So I think you can see where this story's going. So after about 15 minutes, I get up and I walk right back the fucking way I came. That bird was on me like white on fucking rice, man. Just pecking my ear. And I was like, no, how did I forget? I made all these plans. I wasn't going to go this way. I was going to walk around the perimeter. Fucking birds up here. Seriously, you should have your mayor talk to them. I arrived here on a very... I came here on Friday, and they had just emptied out St. James Park, right? They had cleared out the Occupy people. I know. They're so proud of themselves, is what I love. Mayor Ford was like, well, it was an operation that went off with clinical precision. You're like, really? That's how the Nazis sounded after they invaded Poland. You know what I mean? It was a quick strike, and it was clean, and everybody's happy now, and no one's shitting in the park, and the yuppie fuckballs can walk their fucking Pomeranian now. I like that they think that the Occupy movement is going to stop if they move people out of the tents, as if people aren't discontent enough to move out of their tents and disco, and if they're not disco tenty enough to fucking keep this thing going, which they are. And the things I've been reading in the Canadian papers and online here are just hilarious. Someone wrote, well, it's not as bad as America. I don't even know why they're protesting. Maybe because they're, I don't know, closing libraries and monetizing different things and privatizing things and taking away public transport and all those fabulous things under the banner of austerity while corporate profits soar into the fucking heavens, reaching Olympus so that only Zeus can talk to these bastard cocksucking fat white guys with fucking ties on who have their head up Lord Black's ass. Maybe that's why people are discontent. I don't know. Rob Ford, your mayor here, who I talked about earlier in the year during an incident where he flipped off a woman with a four-year-old in her car, was it? So he's a man of taste and discretion as far as I know. Let's just say he's an equal opportunity kind of guy. I don't think kids should be spared the adult trauma of being flipped off when they're driving, and I think he's learning them early. It was, in fact, the Rob Ford Early Learning Center of Manners. This was about the TTC routes and all that jazz, and he issued a weekly update, and I love his style because he's both verbose and obtuse, and in that fabulous way. As someone said, he's gone to the Stephen Harper School of Communications. For everyone listening in America, Stephen Harper's the prime minister of this country. Sorry, that's not funnier to you. Recently in the news, there's been some discussion about the TTC. Let me assure you, no TTC routes are being cut. The TTC is implementing service level modifications, blah, blah, blah. On Monday, the city will be launching the 2012 budget. We look forward to that. Our administration has used such alternative, innovative strategies like monetization. Let's just stop for a moment. We're supposed to unquestioningly blink and swallow and go, monetization's great. Wow, that's a really adequate, that's a really innovative strategy to sell off shit privately so that you have no recourse and the government can never be held accountable for anything ever again and will live in RoboCop world where private cops come to your fucking door and go, I think you broke the law. Such strategies provide adequate and sustainable funding for the services that are important to you. So one, he knows what the services are, and then the what they wrote afterward is telling us to quit worrying because he's got things under control. When I hear the word monetization and innovative strategy, that doesn't sound like control to me. That sounds like I just got those people out of the park. Let's see what I can fucking do now. Because the one in L.A., I think, is fixing to get moved, and they're offering to give them offices. And the one in L.A. has distinguished itself as being the one where the least violence has taken place. The mayor came off the first day and so did the police. And I've been to the one in L.A., and it's right next to the police station, and it's been quiet as anything there. The one in New York, as you know, got torn down. And the library that the poet laureate had a book in was basically destroyed and given back to them like, oh, we thought it was garbage. And exactly, there's only two things you can say when people start getting tear gassed while they're sitting and they're teenagers, and when books are destroyed. It just reminds me of the good old days. That's all I'm saying. An Orwellian sense of history is what it is. And then I was reading today in the National Post. Yes, I was reading the National Post because I'm a Tory. And I read all the Canadian papers because I like to get all viewpoints, as they say. And there was a person named Rex Murphy who writes for the Post. Oh, you know who he is. Well, first of all, let me read you this letter that was in the fabulous weekly Now. Because I'm always talking about Occupy, and people still ask me, what do they want? They don't have anything. Why are they? What's happening? Well, a lot of people are really rich. They're not sharing it with anyone else. And the rest of us have to suck a giant bag full of man. That's what's happening. But this letter I thought was very well written and even-handed, as opposed to the crazy people who ride in and go, like, what do these stinky people want? They're sitting in the park. Occupy a state of mind. One by one, they occupy camps. This is a person named David McLaren from W-I-A-R-T-O-N. Wireton, of course. Just like it's spelled. There are things in the blah, blah, blah. The camps occupy public space and the public's attention to ask some tough questions. Are we too preoccupied even to hear them? Does Occupy refer to our state of mind? What happens when we hear only one side of the story from political leaders to opinionators and there's no time or imagination left to question what we're being told? There's an important question. We're being asked by our sons and daughters to pause and look at what we have wrought. Their mirror is a tent city filled with the people who know what the world looks like from underneath. What is our answer to them? Judging by our rush to remove them from our mind's eye, it's Ebenezer Scrooge's plea to his ghostly visitors, show me no more. I've been talking about it a lot because I really feel like we've reached that state now with the entire movement, is that they're desperate to make sure this is over. And it's not going to be over because their inequity is not over. And this is what Rob Ford said this week, your fine mayor. The protest is over and I'd like to keep it that way. Spoken like someone who's never protested before. I said from my giant tower full of privilege, I hope that's done. Why can't everyone just go home and be happy? It's Christmas. You know, the time of year that reminds you of what you don't fucking have? So to get back to the National Post, this Rex Murphy person, who you know, but I did not know until I'd read this today, wrote one of his fine editorials, and I read a bunch of them today because I was having fun. And yeah, after breakfast, it's Rex Murphy time at my crib. I didn't realize when I started reading it what it was about because it was this, the headline for his opinion column was "What the Tolerant Must Tolerate." And I thought, oh, that's an open-ended kind of sentence. Maybe we'll be looking at an expansive state of mind where freedom is granted to everyone and there'll be no judgment and we can all work together even though we have opposing viewpoints and learn to work with one another. But no, it was what he thinks. To be a serious Christian in modern Western culture is to be the favored, easy target of every progressive thinker and every half-witted comedian. Well, that caught my attention. Being a proud, half-witted comedian and being a mildly progressive, poison liberal, that cut to the very heart of what I thought. To be a serious Christian in modern Western culture is to be the favored, easy target. I see. Let me explain something to you, Rex, is it? I come from the United States where about 96% of the population is Christian. About half of that is Catholic. We know what's been happening with the Catholic Church in the last few years. We know what's been happening with the Christian Church. We saw what happened in London when they tried to occupy outside St. Paul's. The kind of liberal-minded openness and love that the Church of England showed those protesters by having their bishop completely freak the fuck out. I can't get over that Christians think they're targets in this world. God damn it, they're running everything in this fucking world. If 96% of the population's Christian, how are you a fucking target? Who is targeting you? Someone who thinks that differently for 2 seconds is impugning the very fucking faith that you purport to have? Certainly if your faith is so overwhelming and comprehensive, it can withstand a few pricks now and then. Let me be one of these pricks. With a giant purple head. I mean, honestly, stop being a fucking victim. This isn't ancient Rome. No one's throwing you to the fucking lions, man. First of all, I'll believe that you're not a target when every church opens up its doors and lets homeless people sleep in it all night. I don't see that fucking happening very much. And I'm very serious when I say that. When people are like, well, you can't do that. Yeah, of course you can. Of course you can. It is to have your sensibilities and your deepest beliefs on perpetual call for taunts, mockery, and desecration. In your view, what about our point of view, if you're not a Christian? And I was baptized Episcopal, if you can fucking believe that one. What about everyone else? What about other people's points of view being called out for desecration? What if you're, gay and want to get married and the Catholic Church is still on your dick about that? Maybe they're desecrating your fucking point of view. What if you're a woman and you want to have control of your reproductive organs? The church isn't on board with that. Is that desecration of your fucking point of view? Just taking the other side. And at a time when all progressives preach full volume for inclusivity and sensitivity, which I do, for the utmost care in speech when speaking of others with differing views, Christians are under a constant hail of abuse and disregard. There's nothing too low or too vulgar, and this is what he's getting at. Now, you're going to think he's going to say someone has cut to the heart of the church or someone has impugned Christ yet again or something has just torn the church asunder. As you can see, all the churches are disbanded and they're all vacant lots now. Something as inconsequential as a Christmas special, for example, will almost always have an essential element in being Christ's birthday, after all, something determinately offensive to Christians. Russell Peters, the Canadian jokester, for his special this year, has invited Pamela Anderson, pinup queen and soft porn actress, to play the Virgin Mary. This is what he's fucked off about. He is fucked off that Russell Peters, to the best of my understanding, a famous comedian, is getting Pamela Anderson, also famously involved in comedy. If anyone saw the Borat movie, she's hysterically funny in that movie. She's also a famous Canadian, like Russell is. Don't you see what he's doing here, Rex Murphy? I think you'll find, in the depths of your fulminating, it's a joke. And second of all, pinup queen and soft porn actress? Methinks thou dost protest too much. I watched Baywatch. Soft porn isn't what I'd call it. Hardly. And by the way, if you want to see her do more than soft porn, that's available at all times. To play the Virgin Mary. Pamela Anderson as Mary the Immaculate. I know, the wit, the daring, the originality, blah, 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 blah. Talk about cutting edge. The casting is so clever. Getting a lewd exhibitionist to play Mary. Now, Pamela Anderson is many things. She was a reality TV star ever so briefly. She's had several awesome shows like VIP and Baywatch and shit. She did a fantastic movie called Barbed Wire. She made an awesome video with Tommy Lee that's very entertaining. Although it really sags in the middle. And I believe there's only two or three three-syllable words spoken in the entire video aside from the word Pamela. Yeah, it's like an hour long, and it's all one- and two-syllable words. So the bon mots are flying. Lewd exhibitionist. Now, isn't that a bit of an imposition on Pamela Anderson? Anyone would say she's a hottie, maybe even if you wanted to be horrible about it, an aging hottie, and a hottie who's an adult now, and therefore, by the male viewpoint of the world, should no longer be trotting her hotness out. But he finds her to be a lewd exhibitionist like Salome. Which I think is awesome. But for believers to object, that would be irksome and stuffy and high-handed and parochial. Wow, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I find it to be. Irksome and stuffy and high-handed and parochial. It's a bloody joke. There was another example, blah, blah, blah. Pamela Anderson of the Virgin Mary will tickle the funny bone, and you're going to like this, of every single-digit IQ from St. John's to Victoria. Yeah, get it? Only an idiot would think Pamela Anderson on the Russell Peters comedy show would be funny. He, of course, will be rereading Aristophanes' The Birds. There was another example in the now nearly defunct Occupy movement. I see. So he finds that it's now nearly defunct because they cleared out the one in Toronto and he doesn't care for the other ones. Wow. And then he talks about people actually defecating, and he says, I could use the vulgar term, at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, where John Donne preached, where Lancelot Andrews, one of the fathers of the King James Bible, was dean, a cathedral arguably second in importance in Christianity only to the Vatican, treated as a sewer. How about the way that people were treated that were outside? If you've been to England or know anything about the English economy now, it's un-fucking-godly, and they are fighting for their lives. And the poverty rate in England is astounding. And that church did not distinguish itself by turning them out and locking the doors and stuff like that. And all he says is that people were shitting in the church. Maybe because they weren't provided with toilets at any point to conduct what I believe is a legal, I was going to say occupation, a legal demonstration. Blah, 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 blah. Of all episodes, there is no end, da, 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 da. However, there is a radical inconsistency to the treatment afforded to Christian believers, and that most of the other religious groups, and it is not idle to insist on the point. It would be rather nice if so many people, the Christians of the West, who offer respect, tolerance, and regard for beliefs of their own, could be treated with equal civility and courtesy. Really? You mean the equal civility and courtesy like calling everyone who's going to watch the Russell Peters special a single-digit IQ? That kind of courtesy? Calling Pamela Anderson, the unbelievably fluffy actress who no one cares about because she's just fucking there, a lewd exhibitionist? Kittens McTavish, Mr. Murphy. What if the church, I don't know, gave away all its money? Had that ever occurred to the church? If you've ever been to the Vatican, you know the church that St. Paul's is only second to in sanctity, it's like visiting a corporate headquarters. There is no solemnity or spirituality to the Vatican. There isn't even a Jesus over the main altar. There is, however, statues of every pope, including one of my favorites from the Middle Ages, who has his foot on the globe, stomping on England where the Reformation's taking place. It's made of marble, and it's exquisite, and there is not a hint, not a rug, not a place to sit. It is just a fucking Bank of America world headquarters. And then you go below, and St. Peter's supposed to be down there, and all the popes, including, if you remember, J1P1, right? Before John Paul II, there was another pope who was, well, let's just say he died before his time, mysteriously. He's buried down there, too. So, yeah, when you talk about civility and courtesy, I don't know. This current pope that we have, this Ratzenberger, what was it? He was in the Hitler Youth, but he was forced to be in it. He took a picture in the uniform, but they made him do it. It's all circumstantial evidence. A lot of times I'll put on a Hitler Youth uniform and run around the house before I take a shit in a small church I have in my house. I'm all for Christianity, and I don't believe that anyone's faith should be dumped upon, but wow, get a fucking sense of humor. That is so bloody parochial. Let's get to a couple of corrections from last week. I got a question about French directors, and if I could find it, I don't think I can. And I forgot to mention two of my favorite French directors. I mentioned René Clair and Claude Chabrol and a bunch of other ones, but Clouzot is one that I want to talk about, exactly. The Wages of Fear and Diabolique, and Clouzot is an amazing director. Hard-going as a person, I think, and his gorgeous, fabulous wife. Do you know his wife's name? I can't.
I don't.
Me neither. Well, someone will iPhone it before the evening's over. His movies are amazingly terse and hardcore, and definitely bear watching. And because I think the question was, if I was going to be a director, what kind of director would I be? Oh, there it was. What are your thoughts on Jean-Luc Godard? And I somehow got into every French director. And I said, Godard has a lot of polemic. Funnily enough, not like this show at all. And no, Mom, just pure entertainment. In any case, the director I think I would want to be if I was going to be a director would be Melville, Jean-Pierre Melville, because he made Bob Le Flambeur and Le Samurai and The Cirque Rouge, and all of his movies are unbelievably stylish and fuck off, right? Le Samurai, Alain Delon is this like mystical, ephemeral fucking guy in gray with the trench coat done up in the hat, everlasting cigarette, and he just goes around and kills people. And then when he goes back to his house, he lays in a gray bed in a gray room with a gray bird in a gray cage. Like, that is how... Yeah. We get it. And in Le Cirque Rouge, I'm almost certain in one scene, later in the movie, again with Alain Delon later, and also Yves Montand, at one scene, the grass is so brightly green next to this car that I'm certain he painted it. And I almost got a boner while watching the movie, thinking about him making the crew paint the grass bright green. So his movies are definitely worth a go. And they're really, like I say, really stylish. Although there's another great one called Touché pas au Grisby, and I don't know the name of the director. Jean Gabin is an old con, and he's going to pull one last job, as they always do. Jean Moreau is a young girl in it. That'll give you an idea of how old the movie is. And I remember seeing it in a movie theater. And at one point, he takes his buddy back. His buddy's is dating a showgirl. They're far too old to be with the girls they're with, of course. They're old gangsters. And they're being chased. They know they're going to get whacked. So they go back to his throwdown crib. He has a throwdown crib, right? Like, first of all, that you have a throwdown crib in Paris is beyond all measure, right? So that was exciting. Now the crowd's on. Everybody's sitting like this. Oh, my God, what's happening? And Jean Gabin looks like a combination of Spencer Tracy, Robert Mitchum, and a bulldog. Just like his face is a as I've described Charles Bronson, his face is a fist being thrown as a punch, right? Just so he's unbelievably cool, everlasting cigarette, and right, and then French gangster slang, right? They call each other Mac and shit like that, and they go out to his throwdown crib, and he's like, don't worry about it. There's a girl that... Girls are like streetcars, you know, that kind of shit. There's a girl every 5 minutes, you know, you'll get another one. He gives him pajamas. He goes, I don't have any bread here because this is my crib that I keep, but I do have some crackers, and they take out pate and crackers. This is what French gangsters are eating in the 50s, right? They're not having... It's not like a Godfather. No one's stirring sauce on the thing. They're fucking pate and crackers. And he opens up... He's got a little camp fridge, right? One of those little dorm fridges. He opens it up, and it was full of champagne. Not even in focus. In the mid-distance of the shot. And everyone in the movie theater went, yes! And just started applauding. I've never seen a crowd so happy in my life as when I saw Touché pas au Grisby. When he opened the fridge, he's talking, and it's just full of champagne. There was nothing else in it. And I thought, that is fucking cool. And then he had toothbrushes and little paper packets, and they brushed their teeth and put on pajamas and went to bed. It was the key. Yeah, it's a fantastic movie. You should see that one. And then there's another one called Any Number Can Win, where they knock over Jean Gabin as an old gangster, and he comes home, and they show a housing project, just big block buildings, and then one small single-dwelling house, and he walks right into that one in the middle of it. And he's been in jail, clearly, for like 5 years. And he sits down and lights a smoke, and his wife's like, hi. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going on another job. And she's like, oh, no. I'm like, yeah, that's how the movie starts. So he picks up Alain Delon, who's a pet up rock and roll teenager, but it's France, so they do rock worse than any country. So he's lying on a bed with a transistor radio, smoking with a leather jacket on, going like this. Like, furiously rocking out to the shittiest French rock of all time. And they knock over a casino, and it's really good. It's really good. A bit 60s. There's no CGI. No one hangs from a thing like this for half an hour. But in any case, those are some awesome French gangster films. I could watch French gangster films all night. In fact, I'm thinking about knocking off right now. I'm joking, of course. We take questions here on the show. But before we do, how much time we have, Jeff? Oh, we're at a half. Backstage... Well, I'm doing a sketch show after this, if you can believe that. One of the young ladies had a magazine here called Popstar, which I believe is a Canadian... This is the December issue of Popstar. Double Diary. I haven't read one of these magazines in a long time because I'm not a pervert. And, but I presume these are the magazines that my sister used to read when she was a teenager. In America, it was Tiger Beat. And in those days, it was Dino, Desi, and Billy, and the Monkees, and stuff like that. And yeah. She was real into that. And it was, Davey's Secret Passion. You know, and it's all still here. Ultimate Justin Bieber Tribute. His fave things, unseen photos. Well, by the very nature of you printing them. And craziest rumors! Exclamation point. Are you ready for the Hunger Games? Flashback, Taylor and Justin's first ever photo shoots. And then 26 free hot posters. And she has them up in the dressing room there. They are so NAMBLA pervy that I can barely... Seriously. Wow. It's like 14-year-old guys who are rock hard with their shirts off, standing there gazing balefully at the camera. I'm just guessing that not only little girls enjoy this. It's for the young, but all can enjoy. A Justin and Selena timeline of love. Now, first of all, how old are Justin and Selena? Timeline seems a bit arduous. We're hardly going back to the Pleistocene epoch here. My God, they're both under 18, aren't they? Or are they just 18? And they've been dating for, what, a year, maybe? It goes back to, cast your mind back. I don't think anybody, I realize things go ever so quickly, to December of 2009. Those days that were shrouded in the mists of time, only spoken of by the elders of the tribe around the fire. In hushed tones after the mists have settled. The pair start to connect when they perform shows together like the highly televised. Can you, right, that doesn't even make sense. Either something's on TV or it isn't. How can it be highly televised? Did they show it on every channel? Did they show it in the sky like the bat signal? Was it broadcast from K2? From Lake Titicaca? Why is it highly televised? I think they mean heavily televised. Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve with Ryan Seacrest. Well, fuck, who's watched that that isn't bedridden? You have to be 6 years old or have a terminal disease to watch that fucking show. Jesus Christ. That wasn't cool when Dick Clark was hosting it. Even Serenade Selena with One Less Lonely Girl. I have no idea what song that is, but I shouldn't. February 20th, 2010. Almost two whole months later. Shit is fucking snowballing. Selena and Justin play PopCon Music Festival together, exclamation point. Are you fucking kidding me? Together? It's only been 2 months since they connected on the highly televised Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve with Ryan Seacrest. Who's ready for that kind of commitment when they're 17? I love Justin, blah, blah, blah. When he first came over from Canada, his manager contacted me and said he would like to meet me, and he was just such a good kid, Selena told MTV News in February 2010. And I feel like a big sister now because I want to protect him. I don't think there's anything more beautiful than when a young girl feels sisterly emotions. And those emotions metamorphosize in time and change and become pervy teenage emotions. Selena goes on George Lopez Tonight, July 2010. Oh yeah, it's fucking 6 months later, 4 months later, and talks about Justin. I love him, he's like my little brother. Yeah, we're running a theme here that's getting a little creepy. Let's move forward. February 2011, almost a whole year and a month. The dynamic duo. Now, I know it's easy to be dismissive of teenage recording artists, and I'm going to do that right now. In the 90s, we had to sit through a lot of people saying things like, NSYNC is just like the Beatles, because they're an all-boy band. The difference was the Beatles were enormously gifted and had magical personalities and a tremendous sense of humor, and they all had four distinct points of view. No boy group had that, and no pop group now. I'm starting to sound like my parents a little bit, because I thought the Monkees were off the fucking hook when I was little. So if you're 9, please forgive me. If you're 9 and listening to this, I want to know your parents. Because, wow, do they have some open-minded... You're not at Rex Murphy's house for the holidays. February 27, 2011. Just later that month, Justin and Selena make their first red carpet appearance together at the Oscars! Exclamation point. Talk about a big announcement on a big night. I almost couldn't sleep. I was a little busy. First of all, wondering why Selena and Justin were at the Oscars. And then I remembered Justin had put out that fabulous movie in 3D. Which gave me the opportunity to ignore his work in one more dimension than I would have. May 22nd, 3 months later, Selena and Justin shock the world by kissing on live TV after Justin wins a Billboard Award! Exclamation point. Fuck. I remember because I was in Botswana at the time. I was on my way to Sudan just as the new nation, South Sudan, was coming into being, and I remember the Sudanese could talk of little else. May 27th, 2011. Yeah, we moved a whole year ahead. Things heat up for Selena and Justin! Exclamation point. Every single sentence, by the way, has an exclamation point on it. It's like the most annoying text you've ever received. Exclamation points, in my opinion, are the last refuge of the scoundrel. They really are. Semicolons, almost always misused. Overused. And exclamation points, never. You should never use an exclamation point. Thank you. You really oughtn't. It's just terrible. I mean, when you see a sign on the street that says stop, it doesn't say stop, exclamation point. We are capable of digesting the full meaning of words without an emphatic piece of punctuation to ruin my day at the end of it. They vacation together in Hawaii and have some very public displays of affection. And there's an awesome chicken photo here of the both of them, where she's in a very skimpy bikini and he's wearing some of his customarily restrained shorts. And that fabulous haircut that he wears, as if he's just been born to an osprey. Rumors of a breakup surround the couple. That didn't happen. September 5th, the duo takes a day out of their busy schedule. Fuck, really? I would never let those kids stop working if I was their parents. Thank you, buddy, in the back. I just wouldn't have them doing the job they're doing. I would have them gainfully employed in a coal mine or making t-shirts. Maybe putting tennis shoes together in Guatemala. Justin's faves. Sleep! Exclamation point. I think I've just proven my own exclamation point rule here. If there's one word that doesn't require emphasis, sleep! Coma! Justin told pop star he sleeps to de-stress. My only hope is that, like Sarah Bernhardt, it's in a coffin filled with love letters from his admirers. It's my favorite thing that she did. His fans! Exclamation point. Justin's always thanking and interacting with fans on Twitter and YouTube. Well, good for him. Canada! Exclamation point. Justin has a lot of pride and frequently references his hometown, Stratford. Well, I bet you want to know what he hates.
What's he hate?
Uggs. Uggs. Here's something that he loves, and this isn't going to come as a surprise to anyone. Fruit! Oh. And here's a page that I think is going to stir the cockles of any man who's got the poster on his wall. Justin Bieber, domination, exclamation point. I had no idea these were so good. Now I'm going to have to start buying them. And horribly, I'm going to have to stand outside the newsagent and go to a child. Will you go inside and buy me Capstar? Listen, I'll get you some Sour Patch Kids if you get me the Capstar, man. He's really in this magazine a lot. Isn't there anyone else? Surely there's another. Oh, Justin's right-hand man. His musical director and guitarist, Dan Cantor, about his life revolving around Justin Bieber. Wow, such a rush. The best part of performing with Justin is seeing and hearing his fans enjoy the show. Surely it's watching Justin sing and dance. Apparently not. That's from his guitarist. My wife is like a big sister to Justin. It's getting kind of hectic. It's getting kind of hectic. Man, I don't know if I... Good thing I have this table in front of me. This is crazy, dog. Which Bieber song describes you? Okay. Baby. That means you've had your heart broken before, and just like Justin, you're hoping to heal so you can be in love again. It worked for JB right now. He's in love with Selena now. Be patient and the right guy will come along. You know, in all the years I've been married, I've been looking for the right guy. I just hope that there's a guy out there who feels like he's my older sister. Oh, Taylor Lautner. Finally, someone else. Taylor Lautner. Wow, does he look like he's in a gay porn? That picture, my goodness. And then some of the other, I think that's all the Twilight people here. Rob and Kristen and whatnot. I could really read this all night. I said I like French gangster movies, but I didn't realize how entertaining this was. Seth and Leah Clearwater break from the wolf pack with Jacob at the outset of Breaking Dawn. Is anyone? No, me neither. Boo-Boo Stewart? Boo-Boo? Anybody? No? Okay. We're all too old for this, thank goodness. Biggest flirt, Bronson Pelletier. I don't know who he is, but I presume he's a flirt. Best dressed, Dakota Fanning. She's 12. Well, good for her. Oh, and there's some shirtless pictures. Young girls need this, hardcore. When I was this age, it was David Cassidy because he looked like a bitch. Donny Osmond and David Cassidy, that's who the girls went crazy for. And Michael Jackson in those days. Yeah, because they were hot. Super hot. Is The Hunger Games the next Twilight? God, I hope so. Because then I won't have to see or read that either. No, I don't want to... Someone... Oh, there's a cute picture. Rob Pattinson and Kristen Stewart pretending to play chess. When you have a red and white chess set, you're not playing chess. You're pretending to play chess. No one has a red and white chess set on Earth that I know of. Ever. In the history of mankind. Not since chess was invented. Whenever it was invented. In Persia or whatever. Now, does that look like a girl or a guy? That's boo-boo. Ooh, holy kittens. Disney's Austin and Ally. Okay. Thank you for lending me the Pop Star Double Diary magazine. It was, in fact, a lot more entertaining than it had any right to be. I'm excited to know that sisterly feelings can really move on. We take questions. We're going to take some from the audience, but first I'm going to take some that we get on the electronic mail here on the podcast. You may email us at smartest@aspecialthing.com, smartest@aspecialthing.com, and I will entertain your questions. I do not read them beforehand, nor did I read Popstar beforehand. I saw the poster, and let me just say it piqued my interest in a fraternal way. I don't like young boys, but then again, I never studied for the priesthood. Oh, I'm sorry. That was just fucking with religion in a horrible, base, idiotic, fun, and easy way. Bonsoir, Abby. What would be your last meal if you ended up on death row? I think I did that one. I think I did that last week. But I'm shorting my wife. My wife is a superb cook, and she makes a dazzling variety of dishes. She's making, I believe, lamb burgers tomorrow night, which I'm pretty excited about. Yeah, all I think about is food and drinking and smoking pot and watching TV. I think about four things. And the Negro Leagues, five things. Five things. Thank you. I think about, and now, of course, Boo Boo Stewart. Because if I was his dad, his name would be Boo Boo Proops. And that would be the biggest boo boo of all. My wife makes amazing seafood dishes. This roasted chicken that she does from a recipe at Zuni, where you brine the skin and then you stuff it with croutons and whatnot. And for Thanksgiving, she made an awesome turkey breast. And one of my favorite ones, though, is this. It's a roast pork with cabbage, red cabbage that's been, you know, like in the almost Eastern European style. And you put pears in it. And it's just fucking, I know people are like, you should have eaten before you came, you know that. And there's that chicken place across the street. Anyway, I can't say enough about her cooking. And we every once in a while, on a holiday, we'll get like caviar or something, a little tin of caviar, and she'll make blinis out of buckwheat cake, right? You know, and put them in the pan and like, you know, do the chopped onions and the egg and everything, which I never use because you should never mix caviar with anything. Your most venerated, thank you, Abby. Dear Proops, what? Atlanta. Oh, I already answered that one. That's last week. What was your favorite cartoon as a child? I said Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. Senior Kittens. Ah. Yes, pobrecito. Colin asks. Colin, is that you? Because if you're calling me Senior Kittens, I feel like your sister. I just saw Colin two nights ago here, and if I hadn't been so drunk, I think I really would have enjoyed seeing him. We had a good time. What is the best science? The kind that is true is the best science. I don't know that anything can be empirically proven anymore, right? Because haven't they discovered particles recently that go faster than the speed of light?
Yes.
Which pretty much fucks up our little construct. That means Newton, Einstein, Kepler, the whole enchilada, Stephen Hawking. Wow, how about that? But as George Carlin said, maybe a new paradigm. The world with shit that goes faster than the speed of light. So I don't know that science is reliable. I do know this. Jesus didn't ride a dinosaur. And when we're talking about Christians being beleaguered, I would also point out this. Four candidates who are running for president on the Republican ticket have said publicly that God told them to run. So if you want to be taken seriously and have respect as a religion, don't say stupid shit like that. And then you'll get a little more respect. I didn't say that the ghost of fucking Eddie Cantor told me to get up here tonight. Yes, he did. He did. It was Mark Twain. Greg, I need you to get out there and gather your reflections and begin to free your mind, Greg. Canada. The most humid summer I ever spent was autumn in Canada. The best science, I think, of all, the one I like the good at, well, I don't know. When I was little, I liked oceanography a lot and, like, you know, the whales and all that jazz, but I've kind of gotten off of that. I think the science of studying humanity is the best science because we don't know anything about ourselves in the end. We know that we're violent, but that maybe we're not programmed to be violent. Everyone says we're programmed to be violent, but other people say we're not. We're actually programmed to help one another. And yet the violence never seems to fucking end. We never agree about anything, but that's part of the complexity of having a questioning mind that we've been given. Also, a lot of the world's underwater from when it was before, when there were humans. Also, haven't they also recently, and you overused the word also in a sentence, hasn't it recently been proven that they found people on North American continent that got here before when they were supposed to have gotten, right? That whole bullshit that we're stuck on, that they came 11,000 years ago over a land bridge, that's a very short amount of time. Humanity's been around quite a deal longer than that. I've always felt that they lowballed us on that one. I've always felt that not only were people on this continent maybe 10 or 20,000 years easily before that, that people took boats and came here as well. Possibly people from Asia, certainly people from Africa. No one ever talks about the navigators who came over from Dahomey on the west coast of Africa and got here well before Columbus. So I think the study of human science is the most interesting study of all. And if I wasn't so busy smoking pot, I might do it. Thank you, Colin. Mike asks, is Canada as fucked politically as the U.S.? Dear Maestro Proops, he asked, is Canada as fucked politically as the U.S.? While the crowd's answering that one, Mike, one woman definitively stated no. No, I think is the answer. I don't know. The U.S. is fucked politically, but everything is going to change, as you can see. I, for one, am never going to vote again, I don't think, because until someone that I think is a human is standing for office. I mentioned it in the last Proopcast that the group of Republicans are the worst people I've ever seen run for president, not to mention their qualifications. A couple of them are fairly bright. Huntsman, you know, yes, he speaks Chinese, and Ron Paul is a bright person, he's his physician, and Mitt Romney is not an unintelligent man. But they're also venal and grabby and weird and psychopathic and off the track. And when you say that God tells you to run, that just makes me think you're delusional. Not that you're inspired by the fucking spirit to help mankind, but that you want to ram your agenda up my ass using a cross. And I don't think that happens in Canada as much. You know, your scary right-wingers are nothing compared to our scary right-wingers. And I say that with all modesty. For every Stockwell Day, we have 1,000 Glenn Becks. For every Belinda Stronach, we have 1,000,000 Michelle Bachmans. But in any case, no, I don't think you are. First of all, you protected yourselves because you didn't let the banks run rampant. I will say this, Prime Minister Harper could, I don't know, take the stick out of his ass a couple times a year. I was reading today, they're having a big conference, and someone asked him straight up, are you going to decriminalize marijuana? And he said, no. In fact, we're going to go after it more, right? I don't remember the exact quote, but it was, we're going to crack down on it more. He said, we don't approve of drugs, right? Marijuana's drugs. And mind you, he was on the West Coast, and what is it? There's a coalition of, what, about 4 or 5 mayors in British Columbia, who, including the mayor of Vancouver, who don't want to decriminalize it because they're having to deal with so much bullshit with the dope. And this is the Prime Minister looking that fact in the face and going, no. And it's happening in the United States right now as well. The DEA a couple of months ago said marijuana has no medicinal value. The person who made that edict, it was at the Drug and Enforcement Administration, which is an office that overlooks Washington, D.C., where there are medical marijuana dispensaries all along the road. So to be able to look out your window and go, that's not true. To go to British Columbia and go, marijuana is a drug and it's never going to come down harder. If I had my favorites page in Popstar and it had my likes and hates, under likes it would say pot exclamation point. Thank you for writing in. Let's take some questions from the audience. Does anyone want to engage? Rob, where are you, my darling? If you look, it's a thing. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Rob Melio. Topher Harrison, two local comedians here. Topher, what's the name of your hip-hop band?
Your New Friend.
Your New Friend. His record will come out soon. He played me a couple jams last night. They're pretty good. How's that for faint praise? They're pretty good. They're okay. No, they were quite good. It was a very amazingly professional, rhythmic, lyrically hilarious. What was it? I'd kill myself if I wasn't such a fucking pussy was one of the lyrics. That made me laugh my ass off. So Rob's out in the audience with the microphone now. I can't see a goddamn thing, so whoever Rob, will you find someone and...
Yeah, all right.
Hi.
Hi again.
Hi, darling. What's your name?
Over here.
Oh, where are you? There you are. I told you I couldn't see. Oh, we met outside, did we?
Yes,
not?
Yes.
What's your name, my precious?
Heather.
Hi, Heather.
Hi.
I'm Greg.
Hi, Greg. Nice to meet you.
I like Ugg boots. I hate phonies and stuck-ups.
If you could live within any novel, which novel would it be?
Oh, golly, that's a good question. I think The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. I'd like to ride with them. That would be fun for me. First of all, I wouldn't have glasses or have any of the ailments that I have now. I would be able to ride a horse. I would be able to parry and thrust and whatnot. I would have a musket. And I would have adventures and have hot affairs with ladies of means who drop bags of money to me in the street because I'm but a poor down-at-heels musketeer. I think that might be... that just came to mind right away. Captain Nemo in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is quite a good novel, and Captain Nemo steals gold from the bottom of the sea and gives it to rebels in Sri Lanka during the course of the novel so they can fight the government, which no one ever talks about in that book. But I hate being trapped in a submarine. I'd much rather have turned over boots and a giant plume in my hat and wear a big brocade sash and shit like that and a doublet and a jerkin. That to me is the fucking essence of romance.
That should be your new avatar on Twitter.
Don't ever, ever tell me what to do, Heather. No, I would look like a Fruit Loop. That's why I wear a suit and tie, so I look like a grown-up. All right. Thank you, Heather, for that. Anybody else? Here's someone down front. I can see them.
Evening, sir.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Gerald.
Hi, Gerald.
Gerald.
Hi, Gerald. I have bad R's. Hi, Gerald. I have a weak R.
Firstly, Satchel Paige.
Yes.
Secondly, okay, if you were a...
Satchel Paige, definitely.
Exclamation point.
Yeah, Satchel
Paige. All right, if you were a piece of medieval torture, if you were a medieval torture device, what would you be and why? Thank you.
Gerald? You haven't been alone all day, have you? This question sounds like someone's been cogitating on it with extreme prejudice.
It's my wife who wasn't able to come. Sorry. It's a friend of mine who wasn't able to come tonight.
Oh, is there? You're saying that question on behalf of someone else?
Yeah.
I see. Why? One wonders about medieval torture, but okay. Kind of a low point in... because we're much more sophisticated now.
Yes, sir.
The American government has things that the medieval people dreamed of having. They didn't have electricity like we do. We can really put one in you. I don't know. I'm not a big person for torture. I'm pretty squeamish in that regard. But I just say, I don't know, I think the wheel, because it's so traditional and old-fashioned. Your limbs are broken and put on a wheel, and then you're spun around until you die. I know, it sounds fun, doesn't it? Wow. What was the Tom Lehrer line? Medieval tortures used by debauchers, lurid, licentious, and vile, make me smile. I'm gonna stick with the wheel. I was going to say the Iron Maiden, but that's just so obvious. And thumbscrews. Who goes for thumbscrews? The rack's just I can't even imagine the rack. Thank you for that, Gerald. And on behalf of your friend, I hope they're satisfied with their dark and leading question. If your friend is dreaming of putting me on the wheel. Anybody else? Yeah, go in the back there, Rob. Get one of the poor people.
Sorry.
Get one of the Occupy movement in the back of the room there.
Caesar.
Hail.
Please explain the 90s.
The first 5 years were an extension of the 80s. I mean, you have only to look at videos from the early 90s, and there's still a lot of big shoulders and turquoise rocking the house. There's still a lot of big hair. The 90s were okay in two regards. Bill Clinton was president for a good deal of them, which made everything a lot gooder where I came from. Excuse me. Not so much if you were a Hutu or a Tutsi. Shitty decade for you there. Bill Clinton, I think, will have to live forever with remembering the fact that he didn't intervene in Rwanda when he had the chance to. I think that if there's anything that keeps him up at night, and I hope that's what keeps him up at night. Because I think he, in the end, even though he's done a lot of things that every leader does, I think he has something of a conscience, and he certainly has a perspective on history. Unlike Cheney and Bush, who apparently spent 8 years driving the world into a ditch and starting endless wars, and then like, I did what I had to do. I think Bill Clinton is regretful that Rwanda went down the way it did. And I think we could have intervened in the Balkans before there was all the genocide there as well. Mm. On an upbeat note. The Beastie Boys made some awesome albums in the 90s. I'll take one more. Let's see. One more question. Thank you for your question. Anybody else, or is that it?
Hi.
Oh, there you are. There.
Hi
no
there.
More ladies? Oh, okay.
Hi.
Hey, bro. What's your name?
My name is Ian.
Hi,
and,
Ian.
And I'm just wondering, James Brown or Parliament Funkadelic?
Oh, no, there, you can't. No, it has to be. I love Parliament Funkadelic beyond all measure. And I met George. Have I told this story on the podcast before?
No.
Really? Because I'm desperate to not repeat myself. I met him. I didn't hear what he said.
Go long.
Oh, go long. Oh, now we're using football metaphors? From a crowd that resolutely rejected my embracing of your sporting heritage? Now you're telling me to go long? Oh, really? Should I put the biscuit in the basket as well? Wow. I don't know what they say in curling. Put the stone near the other circle thing. Fat bald dude. James Brown is undeniable. To me, I don't know, right? There's Irving Berlin and Ray Charles, James Brown, Chuck Berry, Hank Williams. You know what I mean? People who invent the genre that they're in by taking all the other influences and melding them together. James Brown, without James Brown, there's no hip-hop, there's no funk, there's no Parliament Funkadelic. And I think George Clinton would be the first person to say that. I met George Clinton in line at the Grammys. Several years ago, I was doing the red carpets with Joan Rivers. And I'm sure I told this. All right, anyway, I'm going to tell it. So I'm at one station, right? I'm at the infidel station down the carpet, right? I'm at the not-so-great station. Joan and Melissa are at the front, and they're interviewing the Pussycat Dolls and Justin Timberlake and all the great Titanic musical artists of today that can stand with Ray Charles and all of them and Bob Marley. And Joni Mitchell, right? And I'm down at the other end. We're supposedly I'm getting the second-rate B stars that no one fucking cares about. And I got Enya, right? And Enya's gorgeous. She's tremendously small. Can you be tremendously small? She's asleep! She's a... She's diminutive. She's a Hummel figure. She's a red chess piece being held by Kristen Stewart. Maybe 4'11", beautiful, white skin, black hair. And I said, Enya, how come you never tour? And she's like, oh, I do not. I don't like to ever, you know. And I said, yeah, because everybody loves you in America. She was adorable. And then Lynn Redgrave, who's passed away since, and she was absolutely fabulous. She'd done a spoken word book. I was thrilled beyond all comprehension to meet Lynn Redgrave. She's such a marvelous actor. And then Joan Baez. Right? This is who I got. They thought they were cheating me by sticking me down. Otherwise, I would have had to talk to the Pussycat Dolls and Brooke Hogan, you know? I got fucking Joan Baez, and, you know, so just throw that down. And so I says to Joan Baez, what are you doing here? And she goes, I'm giving an award to the Dixie Chicks. And I said, do you know the Dixie Chicks? Right? Because the Dixie Chicks opposed the war in Iraq. Joan Baez opposed the war in Vietnam. So in the music industry, show business, convoluted, bullshit, let's make a connection way, they went, hey, ooh. She was a troublemaking, oviparous woman of the, you know, she does not bear a penis, and yet she talked shit. And these three artists also do not have penis, yet they have given voice to their opinion. Let us conjoin them. So she was giving them an award, and I said to her, Joan, have you met the Dixie Chicks? And she went, no. And I went, how show business is that? And she fucking laughed. But I thought it was groovy that they had one anti-war activist give an award to another. And then George Clinton pitched up with Cedric the Entertainer out of fucking nowhere. So Cedric's wearing a maroon suit. George Clinton's wearing a giant sheepherder hat with and multicolored dreadlocks. He's got a sweater that is clearly a pierogi has gone down the front of it because there's a grease slide like this, like the, must Justin Bieber's chagrin, multicolored Uggs, and these fruitopian pants. And Cedric comes up, and I'm like, hi, and he goes, hi, and then I go to George Clinton. Oh, you know, George Clinton, right? And a lot of crowds don't even know who George Clinton is, because I talked about it on stage after for a while, and I'd have to say to crowds, not Bill Clinton, George Clinton. And then I'd say, you know, P-Funk, and people would be like, what is this P-Funk you speak of? Father Time, what was it like before sexy was brought back? A good comic would have ended there, but I'm going to finish the story. So I says to George Clinton, I ask him a question, and he goes, the penubrious canblumnion of the calumny of the electric sheep that populate our mind are only indifferent to the cantopony that opens up when one realizes that a perfect world is effervescent. And I was like, right, right. And then he answered all of his questions that way, because I think he was high on the monkey juice, and... I take him aside. I am able to lean to the side, and I just read an article about him, and I couldn't remember what magazine. And I go, George, I just read an article about you. Was it an Esquire or GQ? And he goes, GQ. Anyway, that has been the Smartest Man in the World podcast. I want to thank you here in Toronto. We'll be in Atlanta next Sunday. We'll be in London, England, the Wednesday after that on the 7th of December. I bid you much love, and good night.